You walk in tired and hungry, one bad dinner away from losing it. You don't like to cook. You don't want more takeout. You just want something good. That's why there's Dish by Blue Apron. Pre-made meals with at least 20 grams of protein and no artificial flavors or colors, from fridge to fork in 5 minutes or less. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow. A real person.
Yep. I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow. I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 50% off primetime deals and free professional installation. Rules and restrictions apply.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
Not even pushing double digits yet, but like you guys said, it's one of the special things about our organization to have the continuity on that side that we have.
Appreciate my man.
See you guys.
That is Eric Hasseltine, Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer. Let's take a quick break. We come back, we get into the list. Got to discuss more tournament expansion. Can't wait. As well as a couple other news and notes that I want to get to with Cobb. We'll do that next right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Jason Smith will join us at the bottom part of the hour. Before we do that, let's get into the list. NCAA tournament expansion. All right, Cobb, Ross Dellinger, for writing for his column for On3, says that executives are inching closer to an agreement to expand the NCAA tournament to 76 teams with a 12-game, quote, opening round played at two sites starting in the 26-27 season. So not this tournament, but the next. If it gets finalized, how will it work, he asked. And then you can go read the column over at On3. I think the first thing that was interesting to me, Cobb, is why would this be different? Because I feel like they've been, quote unquote, inching closer and closer to getting tournament expansion. I'm not questioning Ross's reporting. I think Ross is one of the absolute best. But I feel like we've read this story like 15 times over the last 3 years.
Yeah, what has changed financially to actually make this a good option? Because look, I get it. If in this day and time you can make a move with tournament expansion that brings in more money, then you're probably going to do that because the NIL era is strapping everybody for cash. But I've yet to have anyone explain to me how this increases the amount of revenue that will be distributed to the teams that are in the NCAA tournament. That should be the basis for expansion, more money. If there's not a clear-cut way to get more money, then why are we doing this?
Yeah, Ross writes, 8 teams are expected to be added to the current first four, played over Tuesday and Wednesday of the first week of the event. No, it won't be referred to as a first 12. According to one highly placed executive involved in the decision, we'll call it the opening round. So according to Ross, the new opening round features 24 teams playing in 12 games over 2 days with 6 games at two sites. Dayton, the current site of the first four, plus another likely more basketball-centric Western location. Those involved in the negotiations caution that plenty of this could change through the course of continuing talks with TV partners Warner Brothers Discovery and CBS. For now, this is the plan. When he asked why the 12 games, the entire goal is to keep the first round of the NCAA tournament at 64 teams. The 12 winners of the opening round games on Tuesday and Wednesday advanced to an awaiting 52 teams in the original bracket starting on Thursday and Friday as they do now. So to your original point, I just don't understand how this adds that much more money, because every TV analyst that I see says, Well, they're not really adding new inventory. You're just adding more games at the same time that they already have games, so you're not really providing anything new for the TV partners. It always seemed to me, it's like, okay, if they were going to expand and they added a new week in a week which they didn't have the tournament, okay, that makes more sense from you're adding at least new inventory, but then we've talked about the complications of that, is that you'd basically be having to start the tournament a week earlier. You can't move it back a week because CBS has the deal with the Masters, and the Masters is going to pick the week, and everyone else, like, it's not that every conference tournament is played that week, but a lot of these venues that have already booked the arenas and whatnot, like, logistically, I just don't see how this is possible. I don't quite understand the stubbornness of this.
Like, who wants this other than the coaches who can make bonuses?
But I'm not even convinced. Are you convinced the coaches do?
If you have a bonus clause in your contract for making the NCAA tournament, yeah, I think some of them do. I think the Big Ten and the SEC and the ACC and the Big 12 commissioners, I think they're kind of okay with this.
Well, let's go to that point, because Petitti with the Big Ten and Sankey with the SEC, they've not really taken a public position on this. And how many things have you seen them not take a public position on?
Well, Sankey said some things that make me think that he's pretty much
He's spearheading this. I thought most of this spearheading is either coming from the Big 12 and the ACC, because I'm not convinced it's coming from mid-majors, because I think they know, hey, they can say whatever they want about all this expansion. They ain't expanding the field with us.
Like, absolutely.
Let's be
not.
Clear. This is just going to be, we got to make sure 17 and 15 Ohio State gets in.
Yeah, I mean, the quote from Charlie Baker from whenever, I can't remember, but I've had it written down. It's one of the reasons is we have 32 automatic qualifiers. I love that and think it's great and never want that to change, but that means there's only 36 slots left for everybody else. And then he goes on to say that he doesn't buy the idea that some of the teams that get left out aren't good. But it doesn't matter if you're good. It's, are you good enough? Or if you can't make a 68-team field, you're not good enough to legitimately compete for a national title. Or let's say you are. Let's say you are good enough. Well, then you shouldn't have messed around in November and December and shot yourself in the foot. Because, okay, great, you peaked in March. You had a good finish to your regular season. Well, November and December count too. So, like, it just diminishes the value of a regular season, that in college basketball, that's already the knock, is that the regular season doesn't mean anything. And it also makes filling out a bracket, which is the most casual sports fan thing ever that draws in millions of people. Hey, I filled out a bracket for my office pool or whatever. It makes it infinitely more complicated when you have 12 playing games.
Are we buying that? So this all goes back to comments that Baker made. He also had some comments last summer that Ross includes in the show of, he pushes back on the idea that we're all doing this for money. He says it's not a big money maker. That just leads me to the same conclusion, which is, then why are we doing this?
I've yet to hear a good answer for that. If they're going to ramrod this thing through that nobody in sports really seems to want in terms of fans, they have to have some sort of financial basis for it. Because I think rational fans will listen to a well-reasoned, financially logical argument for why this is the right move. Like, for example, college football playoff expansion. I think it's ridiculous. I think 12 is a perfect number and a great format. But I understand why they're going to expand. You're going to be able to add very, very, very valuable slots on the TV calendar in the college. But as you've said from the start, Jeffrey, that's not the case with this college basketball tournament expansion. So it's completely illogical. It's exactly the opposite of what all your fans want you to do. And that's exactly why the NCAA is going to do it, because it's the most boneheaded organization to ever be associated with sports.
So I'm trying to, like, as you're talking, I'm trying to think of, okay, what are some plausible reasons? Because there's somebody behind this, because they won't let up on it. So I guess you could make the argument it's a way to appease the big conferences, because they would get more teams, therefore they get more money, and you're trying to entice them to not break away? Again, I'm stretching here, but I'm trying to come up with like actual reasons.
Well, there's that, or maybe there's a TV partner out there who does want more inventory. Not that it's going to get more money to the schools.
I trust John Oran of, I think now he's at Sports Business Journal. No, I'm sorry, he's at Puck now. He says that it is not being spearheaded by the TV networks. And what he basically wrote was they like having the tournament, and so they're willing to like try to work with them, but they've had the same issues that we've just presented, which is, listen, we don't want to like stop the tournament, but you're not actually providing us anything, and now you're asking us to basically have another site in which we're going to have the cameras, we're going to have to broadcast all of this, and now you're adding more games. Like, it's not exactly just a slam dunk for them. It's one of those ones that I don't, maybe it's the idea that, well, if we get more teams in, that's more money for us. But then I'm sitting there going, well, you're going to have a smaller share, because if you're not getting that much more money and now you're adding, what did we say, another eight teams, like, I don't think the piece exactly of the pie is going to be the same. So like, I don't understand this one at all.
A slightly larger pie, but distributed to far more teams. That means less money per team. That's the opposite of the direction you want to go. What I would hope, what I would want, what would be my dream scenario would be for Division I to contract a little bit, go from the 360s down to like the 280s, lapping off, you know, all your quad,
yeah,
what are your current quad four level teams, and then go back to 64. I mean, the 64-team bracket is the most beautiful thing in college sports. And it's already a pain in the butt that we have to deal with the first four. Now you make it the first 12. Ugh, I mean,
thing is, if they're going to do the first 12, like, figure this out. I understand the argument today, which is there are 16 seeds that would prefer to play at Dayton because, A, they get paid the same, and then, B, it's a chance to win a tournament game.
Correct.
Figure the money out. Make the payout the same that it would be if you went to Dayton. Like, just pay them all the same. Put them on the bracket and give us that. And then the first 12 should just be whoever the last 12 teams in the field are, those are the teams that are playing.
Yeah, man, make it a play in between, you know, the 19 and 12 team from the, yes, ACC against the,
yes,
18 and 14 team from the Big Ten. I mean, that's the way you would get ratings, would be to make it all the power conference teams against each other, and let the Cinderellas, I'm with you, let the actual Cinderellas, your 14s through 16s, let them into the real bracket, because ain't nobody trying to watch the you know, the MEAC champion versus the Horizon League champion on a Tuesday night. So but if you, I mean, sure, if it were Maryland versus Ohio State, or, you know, Maryland versus Vanderbilt, or whatever, like Clemson versus Kansas State, like, those games would be at least somewhat interesting.
Maybe. What do you see if you buy this? Because I'm trying to search for another answer. Is it possible the athletic directors are pushing for this? Because if we have more teams that have a chance to make the tournament, we can maybe make more, like, we might be able to get more fans into the games late, you know. A lot of times you see those teams that are out of it by February and March, like those games but just become empty gyms later. Is this trying to keep more teams involved for a longer period, and so therefore you can maybe recoup some money that way? But it's like, I mean, are they really making that much money per basketball game?
Yeah, like, if you're Ohio State basketball, for example, like, they are the archetype of the program that will benefit from this. Perennially around 500, they're inevitably going to beat a couple of decent teams in November and December. They're going to be sub 500 in the Big Ten. They're going to be on the bubble until late February. Like, I don't think that fan base cares enough about basketball to be like, oh, or, well, we might have a shot at being the last team in a 76-team tournament. Like, maybe I'll go to the game on Saturday. You know, like, if you're so bad as a power conference team that you're barely on the bubble of a 76-team bracket, like, I just don't know that your fan base is going to be engaged. I mean, there could be some exceptions to that. Like if you've been a floundering program for a decade, if you're DePaul and all of a sudden, you know, you're in the hunt for the big dance, like, yeah, you're going to see a spike in interest and ticket sales. But you're reaching because you're trying to find an answer to a question that there is no good answer for.
Well, and like the only thing that I can see where it makes a drastic attendance difference is student tickets. And how much money are you because a lot of these games are midweek games, and let's be real, like, Ohio State is a different example because Columbus is at least a major city. But, like, most of the reason why these midweek games aren't that well attended is because it's all in college towns where people aren't traveling to go for the weekend, you know, for the midweek game.
Yeah, so if it's Starkville on a Tuesday night, you're trying to get 3,000 students in instead of 1,500, you know, yeah.
And, like, how much money are you making off that where – I don't know. Maybe your answer is the right answer and that this is the coaches are the ones pushing for this. But like, I've not really seen that.
I think they're embarrassed to say it, but like, I think
I can buy. Okay. I can buy. No one wants to go on the record with it.
Correct.
I can buy that. But like when we don't really make decisions based on like what they want, I guess you could make the argument. The SEC changed its decision for what they wanted for the expanded playoff based on the coaches because apparently the coaches didn't know any of the formats until they got to Destin.
Yeah, I mean, it makes more sense to give the coaches a voice in the college football playoff expansion discussions because, you know, they I think eat, live, and breathe like making the playoff in a little bit of a different way than like. Like, for example, like making the college football playoff is such an achievement and an accomplishment, more so than it really is in college basketball. Like making the NCAA tournament as a major conference program shouldn't be like that big of an achievement. But it's such a, like everything that you do in college football is crafted around, you know, nowadays anyway, in the 12-team era, like how do we position ourselves to get there? And so, like, I understand, like, having the coaches be a part of that conversation. But in college basketball, like, it feels like, you know, if we're giving them a voice in this, why? Like, you know, it should be a given. Like,
there's also a difference between determining how a conference would essentially have its competition send playoff members is different than we want an expanded field so that we can hit our bonuses.
Yes.
Like, to me, like, those are entirely different things. Like, we are having a legitimate discussion, even though I'm with you, 12 rocks. Like,
I love it. I think it's the perfect number.
I mean, we're
rushing way too soon to try to expand the college football playoff.
I get it, money. This was my overreaction on Monday. I think we finally figured out the format for college football right now. Because of the 12-team playoff, I think that has made more teams, like, I felt like this weekend, we saw Kirby Smart go for it on a fourth down. Like, I think it is, like, teams are a little bit, they don't play it as, like, quite as conservatively because they know, like, hey, man, we got a chance to pick up a huge win. Like,
yep.
And the loss doesn't kill us. And then on top of that, making the playoff is going to be an accomplishment. And I do think when we seed it straight 1 through 12, I think we're going to have even better games. Like,
If they were to leave it at 12 for next season, next season would be such a banger college football season because you would finally have the SEC and the ACC at 9 conference games and you would have a 12-team playoff format. And that would be, to me, that would be perfect. It's not going to happen. Like, obviously, we're going to get a new format, but that would be ideal. I love the 12-team format.
This is my big fear. So I had it written out on Tuesday. If you take ESPN's FPI, the top 10 teams that still have a statistical chance to win the SEC, of those 10 teams, there are still 38 games against one another. And so my premise is going to be, I think that the SEC championship game is going to have a combined at least 4 losses.
And you think the loser of that game could potentially be at risk of getting left out?
And then on top of that, if you start doing the math of, well, all these teams are playing each other, someone's going to win, someone's going to lose. I think you could have this just hodgepodge of teams at 8-4 and 9-3, and like you open the door for whoever, like Penn State, Indiana, both of them getting in, and now the SEC is going to sit there potentially with only two, at most three teams, and then we're going to be right back to where we were last year.
I don't know. I think the
schedule thing is the one hesitation.
I think it's going to actually make an impact, and I don't think the SEC would have gone to nine conference games without that. And then you think about last season, the ACC got two bids. Not sure it really deserved two bids.
I'd argue they really got three.
With Notre Dame.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that league, so, you and I were talking about this, that league stunk.
And it stinks again.
Yes. It might be worse because SMU is, like, not good.
Yeah, the two teams that made the playoff from the ACC last year are horrible. Florida State might pick up a second loss on Saturday. So there's a decent chance here that the ACC is a one-bid league. If Notre Dame loses even one more game, it's done. So then you have two additional slots in the playoff that you didn't necessarily have last year. So I think there's a pretty good chance the SEC is going to get a three-loss team in. The only problem is, what if you have like last year where you have three of them? Three-loss teams. There's not going to be room for all three. So which one of your hypothetical Ole Miss, South Carolina, Alabama from a year ago, like in that scenario, who do you leave out? I think that's more likely to be the discussion. I think there will be a three-loss SEC team in the field, but I think there also might be one left out, and that could get really messy.
I think it's going to simply come down to, like, which team. Like, if I'm Ole Miss and I'm Missouri, I better get to 10-2.
Because No doubt.
I firmly believe – To me, it's the same argument that I had last year about Indiana. Forget Indiana. Forget their schedule. Because we all agree there are a bunch of teams that would have played their schedule and would have gotten to 11-1. Like, we all agree. But the reality was, it was an 11-1 Big Ten team. Forget what's on their helmet. That team was getting in. I refuse to believe a 10-2 SEC team, no matter if they had a cake schedule or not, that team's getting in.
Oh, and I feel the same way about Notre Dame.
Yes. And honestly, yeah. I don't have the world's biggest problem with it. Like, I want to encourage the scheduling of those kind of games.
Oh, yeah. When your losses are Texas A&M and Miami.
By a combined,
like, okay,
4 points.
Yeah, sure. Like, if it had been last season and they had lost to Northern Illinois and then lost again to somebody else, then it's a different discussion, you know? But I think 10-2 Notre Dame probably should be in.
I don't know why. I know Notre Dame makes people feel the same certain way, but it's like, I have no problem if that team ends up getting in. Let's do Baseball America. All right, Cobb. So I was scrolling the internet today, and I saw this list, and this list actually made me laugh because it's one of those, like, microcosms of what time you're in. Okay. According to Baseball America, the top 10 college baseball recruiting classes of 2026. It should be as no surprise to anyone, the top three schools are SEC schools. Texas, because to me, college baseball is still the ultimate vanity project. If you're spending on college baseball, there's not much return in investment. You're doing it because you want to win, and I'm that's fine. If that's what's important to you and your fan base, so be it. Texas 1, Tennessee 2, LSU 3. Like, no surprises whatsoever. But I love this one. Number 4, UVA. Brian Connor leaves UVA to go take the Mississippi State job. And what have we seen has happened in college sports? When your coach leaves, everybody starts spinning. Like, when BYU had our boy go to Kentucky, Mark Pope go to Kentucky, BYU all of a sudden is like the spurned lover. Like, just, she's hitting the treadmill. She's spinning big, like, just going all in. UVA comes in at 4. 5, Arkansas, duh. 6, Mississippi State, because, well, Mississippi State had to entice Brian O'Connor to leave. So, obviously, like, they've got to be spinning big, too. Number 7 and number 8, these might as well be the same school, same colors, only difference is location. Vanderbilt and Wake Forest. Small private schools, like, heck yeah, we'll play in baseball. Like, we're cool, we're winning in baseball, like, everything. 7-8. And then, welcome to the program, Alabama and Auburn at 9-10.
You got three brain schools on this top 10 list.
Oh, yeah.
You would never see three brain schools in the top 10 of any other sports recruiting. But yeah, UVA, Vandy, and Wake Forest are like, sure, we can try to win in baseball. It's interesting, isn't it? Because, like, Texas and LSU, like, yeah, they have the resources to bankroll a vanity sport and still be good at football. Tennessee is kind of on the edge there. That I think they do right now, but, like, long term, if baseball were to slip at all, I could see them abandoning that. Like, if Tony Vitello were to up and leave for the Giants, You know, like they're going to try to keep caring about baseball until their new stadium gets done. But then 5, 6, 7 years down the line, I don't know, right?
Well, it's, like, so to your point about LSU, though, I think LSU has actually prioritized baseball over basketball.
Oh, without a doubt.
Because when I look at McMahon, it doesn't look like he's going into this thing with a fair fight.
No, he's not. I saw a photo of his preseason basketball press conference, and it was basically him and a couple of student reporters. It was kind of sad.
And I think, but like Tennessee is not. Like Tennessee's trying to win it all three.
That's interesting to me. Like I've spent a lot of time around that Tennessee program. I followed it closely for my entire life. Okay, you tell me this. Is Tennessee positioned to actually compete for national titles in football, men's basketball, and baseball? And they care a decent amount about softball, women's basketball. Like, when you think of athletic departments that can bankroll all of it, you think about Texas, sure. Ohio State, yeah, probably. Florida, yeah, okay, maybe.
I'm in the show your work, Florida. I'm sick and tired of hearing about how much money you have and all this. Like, prove it. I think they've got a bunch of people that like love to say that they're rich, but like they're not ponying up, and that's fine. It's your money, do it. But like, I've just never been convinced that Florida's all in on this. Like they are. I think the question is this: I think they can actually win at the level that they're winning at, which is in football, they're good enough to be a playoff team. In basketball, like they're basically right there. And in baseball, they're good enough to be contending for a national title. I think the difference is I don't think they're good enough in – I don't think they're spinning enough in football to win a national title. But I think they are spinning enough to be playoff good.
Yeah, I pose the question to my Tennessee friends like once a year. Would you rather be really good at everything or be absolutely awesome at one thing and just whatever at the rest?
I think you can maybe pick two, because it does seem to me that's what LSU's doing. LSU has decided we're punting basketball, and obviously they're spending some money on women's basketball too. It seems like they're saying we're punting basketball so that we can max out football and max out baseball.
Yeah, but then you got Tennessee and Arkansas, where it's like we aspire to be good at everything, and it's like Tennessee's obviously doing a better job of that right now, because their football program's in a far healthier place.
I think they embraced it earlier.
Yeah, but like if I'm that next Arkansas head coach on the football side, I'm like, really? I mean, I'm three doors down from John Calipari, and you expect me to believe that you're going to give me the money I need to compete at the highest level?
I think it is a very fascinating job to me, because I believe when your job opens, the market will tell you. I'm curious to see how it is, because you can talk me into some of this, you know, hey, if Ole Miss can do it, why can't we? We actually probably are better positioned. We have bigger companies corporately. Like, we can actually do this. But I have the same problem that you do. It's like, okay, we'll prove it. They haven't done that yet. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, Jason Smith joins the program. Let's talk to him about the Tigers and more when we come back right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Jason Smith is the co-host of the Jason and John Show, weekdays right here on 92.9 FM, ESPN, from 11 until 2. Follow him on X at Jason Smith 929. Jason, have you taken notice to all of the media appearances that one Ryan Silverfield has been making recently?
Oh, yeah. He's fulfilling his media obligations, isn't he? I mean, that's that little part of his contract. He's getting, you know, Ryan's getting around. He's choosing his spots, you know.
So the first question I had, though, is, all right, is this get my name out there because I'm now starting to see my name pop up for new jobs?
I don't think so.
Or is this like acknowledging, hey, this is style points matter? Because John and I were talking about this. The fact that they actually started scoring some late touchdowns against FAU, I was like, oh. Is he finally, like, getting it? Like, A, not only are your fans happy to bet on you, but, like, the final score does matter.
It does. I will say that it seemed like before the season he had, you know, I think he's got a regular spot on 56. I think he's got a regular spot. I know he's got a regular spot with Kuhn on
Gabe today, Thursdays on right. Thursdays with Gabe.
Make sure you're tuned in for that. And so, you know, I know, you know, we've asked Ryan to come back on, and I think because of perhaps him interpreting our criticism of him not winning a conference title as, you know, however you want to take it. I mean, we've gone down this road with just about every coach who's been in a seat over there. We did a similar thing with Penny. We were going into last season. People were asking the question, is Penny Hardaway the right man for the job? We all were. We had to be after the season that he'd had before. Penny initially took it personally. And he said as much when he, you know, went off in the off-season radio interview. I think that was an MSCS interview that he did. He came back, you know, and this, we've talked about this. We've done it on your show. It seemed to align with the hiring of Tim Duncan as the assistant AD, with Ed Scott coming in here. Ed Scott obviously doing the hiring of Tim Duncan. It seemed to align with the new regime that said that clearly they said, Penny has said, told him, dude, you know, hey, man, they're going to love you when you're winning. They're going to hate you when you're losing, but do not take it personal. Control the controllables, which is your job. And frankly, you know, this, and I'm getting to a point here with Ryan. Penny looked in the mirror, said, they got a job to do. Who cares if they're criticizing me? What I got to do is win. If I do, they're going to love me. And that's typically the way it goes. But back to here's the thing. Penny realized that, and he comes back on after we had been critical of him, part of our jobs. He comes back on the next season. He comes on our show, and he says, you know what? I had to look in the mirror. And so I'm kind of waiting, and I'll be honest with you, kind of hoping that Ryan sees it the same way, that none of this has ever been personal. And so I know you asked questions. Seems like we're seeing a lot more of them. I've gone into much deeper detail and sort of where we are now as a show with Ryan. As a station, sure, we've got him locked in with Gabe, but we were a show that used to have Ryan on all the time. We were a show that endorsed Ryan as the head, as the head coach or the guy that at that time Laird Veach should hire. Because Ryan was a part of setting the standard, having been under Mike Norvell, and John and I were convinced that he would keep it there. And that's how we operated. And yet when we had to do the other part of our job, right? When we were, you know, in a way, you know, what we thought was going to happen didn't, because you haven't been to a conference title game since Ryan Silverfield got the job. We had to say it. And we had to say it wasn't good enough. And neither me nor him, and Jeffrey, I don't think you, I mean, we've all said a version of the same thing. It's never come from a personal place. Penny realized that. I'm waiting and seeing if Ryan's going to have to. Frankly, he doesn't. He's winning. There's nothing that says you got to come on the Jason and John. And I'm just using our relationship with him right now as the example, not setting us apart from anything here. But that's the issue. And right now, listen, he's picked his spots. I'm cheering for him. We're doing it on our show right now. You know, and I hope he sees that again, when it all boils down to it, man, if you're doing a good job, we're going to say you're doing a good job. If you're doing a good job and yet coming up short on what should be a required goal and expectation of you, getting the conference title games, and eventually winning them at some point, particularly when you've been picked first. Again, Jeff has used it this way, and I really think it's the fastest way to sort of put a button and a period on it. We did this to Penny Hardaway. Right. We said, again, I've used the Penny example, put him in the same boat. Is he the man for the job? We've asked that question of Ryan as it relates to winning a conference title. He's got his team in position again to go and get one. And so hopefully it gets done, because whether it's individual success for him, other job opportunities, or more importantly, as far as I'm concerned, what it means for that program. Because if your coach is going off to better jobs, Justin Fuente and Mike Norvell, that's a good thing for you in terms of drawing candidates in terms of drawing the next, well, I guess we'll say if it happens, the next Ryan Silverfield, the next Summerall, the next Golish, right? You get those guys because they'll look at your opportunity and said, look what Justin, what Norvell, and what Ryan finally did with it. I can do that too. And that puts you right back in that seat that you want to be, where you're the hottest group outside, you know, the hottest thing outside the power structure. And everybody's looking at you as that, oh yeah, that's a spot I can go. I can go win because of the level of investment. I can be out of there. And Ryan's got the same opportunity, and I hope he cashes in on it this season.
Jason, did Arkansas's performance against Notre Dame alter your perception in any way of what Memphis achieved or didn't achieve by beating Arkansas?
You know, no. Listen, Memphis was successful running the ball in a way that even Ole Miss wasn't. Now, I realize we can look at the way Arkansas got clocked by Notre Dame, who I still think, and Jeffrey would know better, Notre Dame's a good team. Yeah, it was a little bit surprising how crazy that score got in the first half, but maybe it shouldn't be so surprised because everybody knows. I mean, that thing was – you know, Sam Pittman was a dead man walking. So back to the point. No, the only thing that's going to really at this point, Cobb, and was probably always going to be the case, whether you won that Arkansas game or not, although having that notch in your belt now certainly helps you in terms of everybody picking you to be the Group of Five representative. What matters now is doing what you haven't done, which is going out and finishing first or second in the AAC. Point being, make the conference championship game. If anything, I'm still encouraged by what I saw against Arkansas, because if you can – Memphis has rushed for over 200 yards, I believe, in all five of its games. And if you can do that against an SEC line, one that Ole Miss didn't have nearly the success rushing the ball, and I realize Ole Miss had things going on, but that's an SEC school that didn't have that. I think it was 3.3 a carry for them in that Arkansas win. That tells me, you know what, that's enough to take that into the AAC, that run game, and be dominant with it. And so if anything, no, I'm still encouraged, not worrying about results for Arkansas at all. And I think you're in a situation now where the winner of the American, because of the work the entire league has done, is probably going to get in. I know it could get, maybe it does get hairy. You got Jeffries brought up the scenario, and it could very well happen where if the league cannibalize, if it eats itself, right, and does damage, maybe there's a way where these other, you know, G5 conferences can get, you know, back into the hunt. But right now, it feels like you just got to go out and win this thing. And yeah, coming off that Arkansas game, even after the Notre Dame loss, no, I think what we saw there, you still apply to the rest of the season and say, well, if they can do that there, they can do that against Tulsa, and hopefully, more importantly, against the Tulanes, the South Floridas, and the Navies.
Yeah, somebody, I think on the American Digital channel, you know, their ESPN Plus thing, there was a guy that was like, went full like Carnacki. Like he had the touchstone, and it's like, who plays whom? So it's like, obviously, Memphis still plays South Florida, Tulane, and Navy. South Florida plays Memphis and North Texas, maybe. Like, there is a scenario where you could wind up with a bunch of these teams having one loss, and then we're having to go to the tiebreakers. But, like, that's kind of my whole point with Memphis right now, is, like, the entire thing's in your under your control. Like, if you win out, you're fine. You're in. But, like, and, like, I think this is kind of where I also am with Silverfield. It's like, I don't really – I'm not even going to do the transitive property of Cobb, how they looked against Notre Dame, because I think it's possible they were on quit watch, and they might have been on quit watch because they lost the Memphis game. I've seen Ryan win that game. We've seen him beat Mississippi State. We've seen him beat Florida State. Like, what we haven't seen is put the whole season together, and that's kind of where I am right now.
Yeah, if you can, I don't know if you're in front of a computer, I'll tell you what my biggest concern is when you're talking about how this AAC is going to play out, is the fact that Tulane does not play South Florida, Tulane does not play Navy, and I believe, and I've pulled it up, they do not play North Texas. Tulane has an AAC slate that right now, with the AAC having already done the work of sort of drawing the country's attention, this is the best Group of Five conference, Tulane now has the easiest road. And what I worry about is their spot's going to be secure. You look at who they're playing, that road game at Memphis that we've all circled. Oh, the advantage for Memphis because they're playing, you know, at the Sim. You know, that's their toughest game. They win that one. Brother, I look at the rest of their American Athletic Conference schedule, and I say they're in the championship game. So what I'm worried about, Jeffrey, is it being, frankly, what could be the two best teams in the league, and my eyeballs tell me they are. South Florida and Memphis, it could be a one-off because of the schedules that are in front of them. You just mentioned, I think South Florida's got North Texas. They don't have everybody you have, but they've got North Texas. They've got you. You, on the other hand, have just about everybody. I get, you know, you've got all those top three that we just talked about. Look at Tulane. They have the advantage now, even though they've been a little, well, certainly they were a little bit more shaky here. What was it, this past week? I think Tulsa was in it for
a
minute.
Yeah, Tulsa was in it for a half, and then they pulled away. But like, I'm kind of with you, Cobb. Have you seen this Tulane schedule?
Look at the Tulane schedule. They have the advantage now. As much as the ESPN predictions have said Memphis is, Tulane has a straight road to the conference championship, even if it's just one loss to Memphis. I can't look at that schedule and say, well, there's the second loss.
So, the only thing I would say is that we don't know. It's not verified, in my opinion, that UTSA stinks. Like, I still think there's a good football team
offense
in there. We just haven't
they
seen
got an
it
offense
yet.
Yeah, I'll give you that. I mean, there's a good offense in there. Jeff Turley does. I agree with you there. I don't know that they're going to be able to stop the better teams in this league with what we've seen from them so far. But that's I think where we need – where our next sort of shift in terms of how this thing is going to play out, that's what we're going to be looking at, because Tulane has an incredible advantage now at this point, now that we're in the AAC. And I'm worried, again, that we're talking about it's going to be an either-or situation for South Florida and for Memphis. And if that's the case, boy, does that South Florida-Memphis game that, man, Cobb, maybe you can pull some strings with your, you know, all the connections you've got writing about what the potential matter. But we're – I know, it, and I realize you're CBS – We're hoping that lines up to maybe a game day spot, but that game could be for, possibly, depending upon how the rest of it goes, you know, that other spot next to Tulane in the championship game because of how easy Tulane's schedule is.
I think it's fair to say this. I'd rather have Tulane's schedule the rest of the way, but I think it's fair to also say I'd rather have Memphis's remaining schedule than South Florida's, because South Florida has to go not only to North Texas and to Memphis, right. They also have to go to Navy on November the 15th. Yep. If those Florida boys are like I think, and that's like sub 40 degrees up in Annapolis in mid-November, that is not exactly where us Southern boys want to live.
No, and where? What was the date of that one?
What's November that, the 15th.
Okay. Yeah, you just wonder what kind of condition South Florida is going to be at that point, too, especially with Brown. We've talked about it before with the way he finishes off runs, everything else. But, you know, defensively, what do you look like at that point? To your point, when it comes to stopping an offense like that, you know, how banged up are you at that point in the season? All that's going to matter. But you're right about, you know, them being at the, you know, on the road at that time of year will be completely out of their element. There's just more losable games on that South Florida American schedule and on that Memphis American schedule than there is for Tulane. And so, again, I know we're a little early here, but I got a feeling it's going to come down to what we're talking about today.
Jason, we appreciate it. Good luck with the Cubs.
Thanks, brother. Need it.
Jason Smith of the Jason and John Show. When we come back, we tell your story next right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
All right, boys. For today's
I got to mute myself here. All right, for today's Don't Tell These Story, Tell Your Story. Lots of great candidates out there. Justin Fields admitting, like, hey, man, we get paid money to play a child's game. Again, I appreciate the honesty and, like, the perspective. It's just not exactly what you want to hear week four. But I got to go with Matthew McConaughey. For those that don't know, McConaughey owns the Austin MLS franchise, or at least owns a significant portion of this. And he's been pointing to the World Cup and what it's going to do for soccer. McConaughey expects soccer to become the country's third most popular sport behind football and basketball. So many casual fans are about to become rabid fans of this beautiful game after the World Cup. I think the World Cup's going to do more for MLS than anything has. You know, after the 94 World Cup, we were just on fire for soccer, weren't we?
I think it's got a long way to go to pass baseball.
I also think baseball's having a moment, too. So I just feel like, I mean, what's the Men in Blazers joke? Like, it's been the sport of America's future since, like, 1976.
Also, there's a good chance that Matthew McConaughey is just on a soccer high right now because his Austin team, didn't they just played Nashville for the Open
MLS
Cup or
Cup,
whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
You
know? All right, my man. Be good.
All right, brother. Sounds good.
That is David Cobb. If you missed anything, be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For George, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kinn Show is coming up next.
Honestly, I wasn't sure we could pull this off ourselves.
You had the vision, and Blinds.com brought your dreams to life.
Yeah, their custom window treatments and free design consultation. Total game changer. Ava walked us through everything. Styles, colors, what would work best in this space.
And we didn't have to leave the house. Free samples showed up fast, and they made it super easy to compare and choose.
Right? Plus, no high-pressure sales pitch, just smart guidance. And the install? I thought it'd be tricky. But Blinds.com instructions were clear. Everything fits perfectly.
And thanks to their SureFit guarantee, if something doesn't fit, they remake it for free. Talk about peace of mind.
And it costs way less than having a designer to our house or going to one of those overpriced showrooms.
We saved money, got the exact look we wanted, and we did it ourselves.
We did it.
So, kitchen windows next?
Blinds.com makes buying and installing window treatments easy and affordable because nobody covers windows better than Blinds.com. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 50% off primetime deals and free professional installation. Rules and restrictions apply.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers healthcare on day one for me and my kids. I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.